97.5, The Fanatic. Now it's time, The Joe Torty Show.
Good morning, Philadelphia, and happy Saturday to you, Joe Torty, 97.5, The Fanatic. Dean Lynam will be on later this evening. Dan Fritz is producing the program. The big news of yesterday is not that I actually made it out golfing for the second time in like 6 days after not going out for the entire season. It went about as well as you would anticipate. But the big news was because I turned my phone off and just tried to stay away from technology for a while, I had a bunch of people, supportive friends and people from the outing, coming up to me, dashing up to me, did you see the news? What do you think? I said, oh boy, I've got some work to do. I've got some homework to catch up upon. And then, of course, once I turned my phone back on and I started digging inside the Zach Ertz trade and the news that one of the longest tenured Eagles is no longer with the team and is headed to Arizona for a haul of Tay Gowan and a 2022 fifth round pick. Naturally, there were a lot of, let's just call it what it is. There were a lot of different feelings about it for a lot of people. Obviously, you see Zach Ertz being a major contributor to the Eagles franchise history, a major contributor to the biggest game in the Eagles history, winning the Super Bowl. And then, of course, all of the aftermath and everything that came afterwards has kind of soured both Ertz and, I would argue, the organization on kind of what's gone on and how his career has played out here in Philadelphia. This is a trade that, and I say this with all due respect to Zach Ertz, this was reported to be a much bigger haul than anything that they were offered prior to the start of the year. That's according to CBS. And I'm sure that they're properly sourced, but doesn't it feel like to anyone else, like when you heard that they got a fifth round pick and a corner that, be honest, you've never heard of, that's the best offer that they got, or that's the first offer that came in? It's a real question. And I say this with all due respect to Zach Ertz and with the Eagles. If there was a trade to be made, it seems like it would have come earlier. If there were trade offers sitting on the table, and that's with respect to Zach Ertz from the organization as well, considering what he's done for you, and if you're not going to pay him, you're not going to give him the contract, you would think that you would try to do your guy a solid and try to help him out here. It's actually, if this reporting and sourcing is coming out from the Eagles, that we were holding out for an offer that we wanted, and the offer is a guy who caught a Super Bowl touchdown pass for you in exchange for a cornerback that you've never heard of and a 2022 fifth round pick. That's actually even more insulting than saying that there weren't offers already on the table. Now, the Cardinals are a team that come in. They have a need for a pass-catching tight end with the Max Williams injury. Zach Ertz certainly fills that need for now. Arizona traditionally has never carried many tight ends on their roster, so they grabbed Ertz. Now Dallas Goedert is no longer splitting snaps with Ertz, so perhaps they're looking at how productive Ertz has been in a part-time role and said, hey, if we can get him involved with Kyler and company, he could have a career renaissance here. And he joins a team that's kind of stacked when it comes to pass catchers. So it could work out for Zach Ertz. Happy trails. And I hope that it does work out well for the Ertz family out there. Having said that, we look at things through an Eagles lens and what it means for the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, they get a day three draft pick and some help in the defensive backfield. But what does it say about Ertz, about the Eagles, about where they are, that this trade came together, you know, as we approach 33% of the way through the season, right? Last time we talked, the Eagles were preparing to face the Carolina Panthers. Kind of a reeling type situation for the Eagles. And I'm not saying that it's one that they're going to hang up on the wall, but the Eagles are able to gut out a win against Carolina on the road. This is coming off of the drubbing by the Chiefs. It wasn't as close as the 42-30 score was. And the Cowboys-Eagles game, which felt as though the Cowboys won by 40, even though they only won by 20. The response after the game was kind of muted. Maybe it's because of the fashion in which the Eagles won the game. Not making a statement, not bouncing back definitively. See, holding a team to 18 points is pretty good. But the Eagles still haven't been able to score, except for the fact when they're getting absolutely smashed. Fast forward to Thursday's game against Tampa. And this was another game where, despite this one was close, most people who watched the game said that they were watching two different caliber teams. You're watching a Tampa Bay team that has aspirations of returning to the Super Bowl and trying to win another one. And you've got an Eagles team who, and I'm not saying that this is this person's fault, but their starting quarterback completed 12 passes in the game. These are things that are different between one and the other. Did I see, and I'm sorry, some time has passed. Good morning, Dan.
Morning.
Did you catch the graphic? And I don't want to misspeak, so I think this is what it was. That Miles Sanders had one first half carry, and that was the fewest number of carries in a half by a team's running backs. They said this season. I'm like, how about ever? Like, has there ever been a half where it's been one or fewer running back carries? Did you happen to see that flash up across the bottom of the screen?
I didn't catch the graphic. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure I heard the morning show speaking of it.
Yes.
Okay. So that, yeah.
I trust those guys. Those guys have my back here. And that is kind of the problem. When in total, between quarterback completions and Miles Sanders carries, that total number is 21. That's pretty brutal in a game where conceivably you'd have like 50 offensive snaps. That's pretty rough right
there.
Does
that include the run-pass options? It might have been a pass, but actually a run, so we'll count it as a run if it's on the second Sunday and Nick's wearing whose T-shirt?
Yeah, exactly. And is he going to start branching out into funny hats?
Please don't.
Jalen Hurts.
I already got into that.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, well, I'm sorry to bring up painful memories. Jalen Hurts, 10 carries for 44 yards. Look, Tampa Bay's got a good defense, a great defense, I would argue. And the Eagles offensively are a work in progress, to be kind. But the boos that came out on Thursday at home as the Eagles fall into a 21-7 first half deficit. And yeah, they scored 15 second half points, but Tampa still scored 7. It was still enough for the Bucs to take it down. I don't know if it was fair to call Thursday a reality check, considering what we just said about the reaction to Sunday's contest, right? Considering the fact that there wasn't, you know, parades and dancing in the streets after beating Carolina suggests that, and I've theorized this all season long, this fan base has a better read on this team than any team of recent vintage here, right? Doesn't it seem like we can never figure out the Eagles on a year-in, year-out basis? They come in and lay eggs in games that they should absolutely have, and they look brutal, and they turn the ball over, they can't sustain drives, they're dropping passes, all this other nonsense, and then they do a couple of those in a row, and then some elite-level team rolls into town, and you're like, oh, okay, you're going to get smashed in this game, and then they come up with a performance, they beat some team that's leading their division. And then you rinse and repeat that over and over again. That's been the Eagles for the last several years. This year, and it's funny because somebody was asking me from out of town who's coming in, saying, what do Eagles fans think about Jalen Hurts? What's the reaction been to Jalen Hurts? And the reaction, correct me if I'm wrong, if you are out there listening, you're thinking, this doesn't make any sense. This hasn't been my experience of the Eagles season. Let me know because I want to hear from you. I can only go from what I've heard, what I've seen, the people that I've talked to. The reaction to Jalen Hurts is rooting, but not hopeful. Right? Like, it's like, you know, I hope, maybe hopeful, but not expecting. Maybe that's a better way. Hopeful that Hurts is able to succeed. Hopeful that he's able to take the reins and be the next franchise quarterback of the Eagles, as I heard one of the national broadcasts refer to him. But not expecting the results. Not expecting that he's going to be ready to join, you know, the top half starters in the league. Have his numbers been okay? Yeah, of course. There's always some kind of statistical graphic that they'll bring up where it's, there's only so many quarterbacks in history who have passed for this many and rushed for this many and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he's always up there with Lamar Jackson and, you know, things like that. My thing with Jalen Hurts is that I'm glad that he's getting every opportunity to show what he can do. Playing on a flawed team, I'll give you that. But more information is always better. Eagles went into this offseason, the draft and everything like that, not really knowing what they were going to do with their offense moving forward here. You're making hires, you're bringing in a completely new staff who, by the way, like that's been kind of uneven. But you bring in Jalen Hurts as a second-round backup. Carson Wentz is so bad that, you know, you have him out of there, and then Hurts is basically taking over the second half of the year. That's still not enough of a sample size for the Eagles to make a decision on whether he is the guy or not. So this was a necessary thing to do. My question is, are you getting enough information now? Do you have a read on whether the issues surrounding the Eagles are bigger than Hurts? Hint, they clearly are. Eagles clearly have bigger issues than Hurts. But once those issues are resolved, is he the guy? I've been saying that I hope that he is, and I don't think so. That's been my policy from day one, and I'll change it if I see anything that suggests otherwise. But at this point, if you're trusting your eyes and that's all I can do, there's nothing that gives me all kinds of hope that this guy's the future. There are bigger problems in quarterback. There's no doubt about that. But the quarterback is still a problem. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. Let's go to Mike in Delaware to lead things off. Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, buddy. I don't know if he's the answer, but
yeah.
before the season started, we all knew this team wasn't going to be that good.
True.
And now that they're not good, we're all complaining. Like, so should they lose in a specific way? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, they're not a good team right now.
Well, so do you think that there's complaint? I haven't detected a whole lot of complaining in the fan base, to be honest. And that's kind of what I was saying. I wasn't seeing anybody throwing parties after the Carolina game, just because it seems like people kind of expect what happened on Thursday night.
I got you. But, like, again, don't cut me off, but I'm not an Eagles fan. But, like, I think the one thing I'll say about him, he is a gamer. And, like, I don't think the coach is putting him in good positions to be successful.
Mm.
They should run the ball more. Like, I mean, that's one run in the first half. Like, that's ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Pretty brutal. I'm with you. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I don't know if anyone with the talent deficiencies and in your what you said, Mike, the coaching deficiencies, I think that those are big time obstacles for anyone to overcome. So it's not like you're necessarily judging Jalen Hurts through that lens either. But you're right, it's a team that we knew wasn't going to have a ton of success this year, and they haven't. You're dead on there.
Exactly, but like so many people are complaining, and I get it. I guess it's how they're losing. Maybe that's why so many people are complaining. Maybe that's what I'm not getting. You know, I don't understand. But we knew they weren't going to be that good. But anyway, I think they should give this kid a shot. He's a gamer. I think he's a good leader. He may not have all the talent, but give him a ride for the season and see what happens.
Mike, thanks for the phone call this morning. Appreciate it. I think that's clearly the plan, right? There's no plan B for this season. I don't know what the benefit would be of going to Gardner Minshew beyond an evaluation. I don't know that. Well, I do. There is no benefit to bringing in Joe Flacco at all. So it's either ride with Hurts and figure out what you have with Hurts, or see if there's anything there with Minshew. Frankly, the more that I learn about the situation in Jacksonville, the more curious I am about Gardner Minshew, because the more that I hear about the situation in Jacksonville, I'm thinking that the dude in charge there has no clue, has absolutely no semblance of an idea of what's going on. So perhaps, I don't know, you know, I'm just putting it out there, Dan, perhaps trading Gardner Minshew is one in a long line of, what should we call these? Questionable decisions made by the guy in power in Jacksonville.
Well, speaking of questionable decisions, uh-huh. I'll throw this one past you.
Uh-huh.
Is Nick Sirianni and the Eagles coaching staff really calling the plays?
I would hope so. What's the alternative?
And I know I'm kicking open Pandora's box and going down a rabbit hole, but everyone's saying as far as the RPOs and why aren't you running the ball more? Is it possible? And yes, I know if anybody else from on the station is listening, but I'm on the question. Is it possible that he's given his marching orders and he's not drawing them up? Nick Sirianni?
The play calling is coming from upstairs, that there are other people that are, you know.
To me, it's the only thing that can kind of make sense. Because how can somebody that's this football guy, grew up in a football family, and everybody's a coach, and you're not running the ball? But you're going to come off of this RPO stuff, and then that's running the ball?
Well, so, and I hear what you're saying. The problem that I have, and Nick Sirianni's not the only coach, not even the only coach in this city, that has fallen in love with the pass, right? The problem that I run into, Dan, is that there are a lot of, like Andy Reid loved the pass too, but there are a lot of analytics-driven coaches that are in love with the pass because of all of the positive things that can happen. Like the only two bad things that can happen when you throw the ball are an incompletion or an interception. And an incompletion is kind of neutral, depending on what your down and distance is. But you could draw a penalty. You could get the defender could fall down. You get a big so a lot of coaches talk themselves into looking at it and say, oh, look at all the positive outcomes from passing the ball versus running the ball. How rare is it to rip off a 20-yard run or a 30-yard run? You would think, as I think your point is, Dan, that a football coach and a guy who's been around football for a long time, family of coaches, would understand the appeal of establishing a run game, getting your offensive line firing ahead instead of being back on their heels the entire game defending.
Exactly.
You would think that they would know. So,
as I say, I'm on the question.
Okay. We'll monitor that. Mm-hmm. We'll take a look. I am not ready. At 6:19 in the morning on a Saturday, I am not ready to start evaluating whether Howie Roseman's calling the plays from on high.
You want one of these?
Yeah, I need two of those huge Monster Energy drinks. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Okay, so here's the other thing. This coaching staff clearly doesn't like Miles Sanders at all, right? like, regardless of whether you like running the ball or passing the ball, they don't like Miles Sanders a little bit, as far as they could throw him.
They do throw a lot.
They throw a ton. Gainwell gets all of the reps there in terms of receiving and stuff like that. I I don't know. If we're supposed to be evaluating this team, and that's what the coaching staff's job was, to get out there and figure out what you have and all of these different pieces and stuff like that, they're doing a terrible job of that. Like, as an example, Jalen Hurts. I've got no questions about whether Jalen Hurts can run the ball. I know he can. At worst, Jalen Hurts is a top four quarterback in the league in terms of running the ball. At worst. The question is that can this guy pass? Can this guy become a passer? Because, I mean, we saw some of those passes this season already. The question should be, is this guy going to develop into a quarterback? Or, like we've seen with a lot of young guys, are they just hiding their deficiencies by their ability to run the ball? Guys off the top of my head, rookie year Josh Allen stunk, and he saved himself and his team by running around a lot. Mitchell Trubisky, not a great quarterback. Pretty mobile, and in his like first couple of years, sustained some Bears drives by moving around and stuff like that. That wasn't long-term translatable for Mitchell Trubisky. Josh Allen, the switch flipped, and all of a sudden he turned into a monster. You need to know which way Jalen Hurts is going to go. Is he going to go the Mitchell Trubisky way, or is he going to go the Josh Allen way? And having a lot, and I mean a lot, like you said, Dan, of RPOs, where if a guy's better at running the ball, I know that Hurts is smart and makes the right reads. But if it's me, and I'm top four in the league in running the ball as a quarterback, and I'm bottom two in the league in passing the ball, my decision-making is going to be a little bit more skewed towards let me do the things that I can do to help the team win, which is, I think, running the ball. So, therefore, you're not learning anything. And I'm not saying that it's like the Ben Simmons push the button and make the guy shoot. You can't make Jalen Hurts make those decisions. You can't make him throw the ball. But if you're putting him in a position to make a judgment call, I'm not sure that you're doing him a service in that area. You're wondering about Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders is about to write it down today. Miles Sanders' rookie contract is about to expire, and then he will just leave somewhere else because he shouldn't be interested in coming back. And why would the team be interested in bringing him back when they don't like him when they have him? Dallas Goedert, you're going to get a great chance to take a look at Dallas Goedert right now. An excellent look at Dallas Goedert because the Zach Ertz cloud has been hanging over Goddard's head for a long time. Now you've got to make a decision about, is he going to be your guy or is he on the trading block as well?
Uh-oh.
It does feel as though the Zach Ertz trade was kind of like the first domino to fall this season. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Also, he seems like a nice guy, Nick Sirianni. But you do have to start wondering whether this is all, or this whole team, this whole outfit is a placeholder for whatever's coming next. I know it sounds ridiculous. I know that you're like four, five, six games into the Sirianni tenure. I'm just saying, you've already played this game where you have the quarterback already and you bring a coach in. It doesn't really work. Is it that far-fetched to say that next year the Eagles would use, I don't know, some combination of their likely three first-round picks to either acquire through a trade or draft a quarterback that perhaps they like more than Jalen Hurts? And to bring in a coach at the same time so you have the regime tied together at the hip? I know it sounds insane, but let's take the long view here.
And you didn't want to go down the rabbit hole I was heading for.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Well, although, to be fair, Dan, to give your rabbit hole some credence, if this dude's out the door at the end of the season anyway, then what does it matter if Howie Roseman or Jeffrey Lurie's calling the plays? Doesn't make a difference.
Touche.
610-632-0975. So you might be right.
It might be crazy.
Well, we know that. That's confirmed.
Ouch.
It's Joe Torti. We roll on until 8 a.m. right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti, 97.5, The Fanatic, rolling on until 8 a.m. Dan Fritz producing the program. Let's go to Teddy in Los Angeles next on The Fanatic. Teddy, are you on the West Coast right now? You are up early, my man.
Yeah, I know. I'm still getting used to the time zones out here.
I hear you. What's going on?
Yeah, I was thinking about like some of the trades the Eagles might be making and this, that, and the other. I like the concept of getting draft pick just because it's like rebuilding the team, but are there instances where we could get like a young player for a guy like Miles Sanders where it's less of a risk because of the misses that we've gotten through Howie Roseman's draft strategy? I just think it's better to get players, even if they're not, you know, starting. Maybe they got drafted and overlooked and they're just sitting around like waiting to play.
And so, Teddy, your reason for saying that is that, like, basically you just don't trust Howie to make the proper decision, so you'd rather find somebody else who someone else has already evaluated.
I think, like, if you look back, there might be a higher chance of getting someone that was drafted last year or the year before that's not playing because the starter's too good, so
sure,
he's just a backup.
Sure.
That's what I want the Eagles to do. I don't want them to draft someone who then needs another year of experience before they even like think about being a starter if they're any good, you know?
It's super interesting that you bring that up because I was just having this conversation with somebody about Davion Taylor and saying like, yeah, is it good that the Eagles are drafting like a linebacker, but that linebacker is going to take a while to develop or might not ever get on the field. So I'm kind of with you, Teddy, especially given that, like, say Miles Sanders, right? Miles Sanders is a guy who has gotten on the field. I'm not saying that he's lit the world on fire, but he looks like a totally competent NFL player. If you were going to swap that for the equivalent situation somewhere else where it's the same thing with a corner, or if it's the same thing with a linebacker or something like that, yeah, I think something like that totally makes sense. I'm kind of with you. I'd rather not look at the way that Howie Roseman's drafted and feel really good about that being the way to build the team moving forward, for sure. 320-975, your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. Appreciate the phone call. So I'm reading the always enlightening Joe Banner article from the Philadelphia Inquirer, the conversation that Joe Banner has there. And he says that he's taking it at face value that Howie Roseman is not going to offload veteran players in an effort to sell at the trade deadline. Joe Banner says, I'm taking it at face value because it's the nature of the roster in the league that it's likely to happen. I don't believe it. This isn't just about the Eagles, but it includes them. If somebody came along and offered to overpay for a player that wasn't in the team's long-term plans, it's conceivable to me that they'd at least engage in a conversation and hear it out. I still believe that there is no intent to make other deals. Like initiating a number of calls to see if they can make those trades. I don't think the definitiveness of the way it was presented precludes the possibility that we could see more deals, though. If you ask me what's likely to happen, I think they're probably done. But if you ask me if I take his words literally that they're done, I would take that with caution. So basically, once again, that's Joe Banner. And you know, doesn't always engage in this, but that's front office speak for they've just got to find the right deal. No, that's basically all it is. It's if they find the right deal and somebody wants to make a move for one of their players, they will, but they're not aggressively shopping any of their players. I'll put it that way. 610-632-0975. Okay, around the rest of the league, I wanted to share this too, because even though it happened in the Eagles game, it wasn't really an Eagles thing. What happened on the Tom Brady interception with Derek Barnett, Tom Brady, and the referee? The first thing I thought is, how is no one talking about this? And then I see this article, and of all places, the New York Post. All right, so what happens is Tom Brady throws a long interception. It looked like a punt. I think Harris was the one who intercepted it. And then Derek Barnett does what you're supposed to do when the quarterback throws an interception. If it's coming back the other way, you get one more hit on the quarterback. You get to block him. You get one more good shot on the quarterback if he's going to be anywhere near heading toward the play. I'm not a big fan of the league loves Tom Brady and the Patriots, and they protect this and they protect that. I'm not a big fan of that theory. But it's getting harder and harder for me to defend when Derek Barnett's going to block Tom Brady and the referee gets in the way and says, whoa, 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 take it easy, take it easy, take it easy. That's what happened.
I thought we weren't going down rabbit holes.
Oh, my God. I know. What in the world was that all about? Like I said, I am not a conspiracy theory guy. I am not the Lee. The evidence is on the field.
Hello?
Jeez. What is that ref doing?
Throwing flags.
He's literally physically trying to get in between Derek Barnett and Tom Brady. He said, hey, don't touch him. Don't touch him. Like, he thinks that they're going to fight. Like, Derek Barnett's not just blocking him and making a football play. Oh, God. You know, you bring it on yourself, NFL. You got people like me, holdouts, who are trying to defend you from people who are like, oh, yep, whatever Robert Kraft needs is fine. Whatever the Patriots need is fine. Whatever Tom Brady needs is fine. That's been the anthem for like the last 20 years.
Want to talk about the taunting penalty?
Oh, my God, the taunting penalty.
Personal foul, looking wrongly at the other team, 45 yards, 6 points in first down.
It's like, the what? And Nick Sirianni, to his credit, was like, yeah, hey, that's on me. You know, I've got to be better. But what, better about what, Nick? What could you have done there?
Wore his visor a different direction?
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous. So, for those who don't know, Avery tackled Leonard Fournette, got up. I guess he said something. It looked like he said something.
That's the only thing I can even something had to be spoken. Because the flex that he did was barely anything. And unless he really, you know, had a lot of, you know, bleep bleep stuff. Come on. That's just so light.
And here's my thing. And maybe I'm looking at this the wrong way. Dan, did you notice Leonard Fournette running over Alex Singleton multiple times? Like, taking him for a ride in the middle of the field? You're telling me, and I'm not saying any, you're telling me every single time Leonard Fournette absolutely trucks Alex Singleton, I'm not picking on Singleton, Fournette's a tough guy to tackle, just gets up silently and hands the ball to the official? Like, the third time in a row you run a guy over, impose your will on him, and then you're just like, you're not saying anything?
Well, no, they just didn't have the mic on.
Oh, my God.
Well, no, I'm quite certain that he ran him over the third time and say, thank you, sir, for allowing me to progress 45 yards on your home field. Please, here, have the football back.
Better luck next time.
Yeah, it's like, come on, dude. May the odds be ever in your favor.
Right, exactly. I don't know. This taunting penalty is dumb. You know what you don't want? You don't want DeSean Jackson running backwards along the goal line and pointing back at somebody. You don't
that
want,
I'll give you.
You don't want Tyreek Hill from like the 30-yard line turn around and giving the peace sign for the last 30 yards that he's running into the end zone. I
that
understand.
I'll give you.
I understand. I get it. But how many times in the Super Bowl, remember Tyrann Mathieu versus Tom Brady, where they're walking next to each other for like 15 yards, just like yelling at each other the whole time? How many times did they show that on the broadcast?
Exactly.
It's gold.
It is gold. And you know they're not sitting there going, how you doing? How you doing?
Exactly.
You're maybe go get a drink or something later on. No. They're indicating about personal knowledge about somebody's family member.
I mean, and like, people are like, oh, these new school players. These new school players are, it's all about me. And the taunting is so selfish, so personal. Like, you ever go to a Packers game in the 90s? You ever go? You could hear Brett Favre talking about people's wives and daughters and family members and stuff from your spot in the stands. You could hear it.
That's rude.
It is rude.
But then again, you can hear the exact same thing from no matter where you were at Veterans Stadium at any time during the 80s.
That's a good point. That's good. On the field or off. Doesn't make
exactly.
You could hear it.
Some of them could have even been staff members.
I don't know, man. Like, I get what you're trying to cut out. All of the other stuff.
But.
Dumb. It's right. There have been a lot of buts. I've been trying to be very, you know, fair and balanced here. But, yeah, that's there's a lot of buts that have been happening. And for good reason. Because that rule is ridiculous, silly, and is doing exactly what you don't want it to do. Which is to say, hey, a bad team like the Eagles actually makes a good play and gets penalized 15 yards for it. That's where we live. Right? Like, that's where the one good play that they're likely to make in the day, that's it. Yeah, not great by the NFL. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. By the way, I am like, I know that I might not sound it. I'm as old school as it gets in terms of my NFL likes and dislikes. But the idea that you can't talk a slight amount of trash to someone after a play is ridiculous. For example, like, you know, if you don't want mic'd up to be a thing anymore, just have everything be all boring. Nobody has any personality. Everybody's just a robot. I'm not signing up for that. This weekend's programming is brought to you by Citadel Credit Union. Citadel Credit Union is committed to building strength together to build a better future for us all. Join us at citadelbanking.com. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Okay. So before we hit the road and get out of here, wanted to revisit the Ben Simmons thing really quickly because, like we said, there are some holdouts still in the city. The Inquirer wrote an article about them. It says almost all of Philadelphia is mad at Ben Simmons except for these diehards. Go check that out if you haven't yet, because there are some people that are not willing to give up on Simmons yet. However, that's who this is for. This report that he, you know, with the masseuse and testing, you know, maybe being exposed to COVID-19, maybe he wasn't actually exposed to COVID-19, maybe he was trying to get out of the game. The whole reason that comes out is to go after those of you who are the holdouts, the last ones. It's not fair, but it's not uncommon. It's something that happens a lot. Let's go to Ian in Delaware next on The Fanatic. What's up, Ian?
Yeah, what's up, Joe? Yeah. Well, how do you think this plays out with Simmons then? Do you think he's actually going to play the first regular season game? Because what would be the purpose of them doing that?
So this isn't insider knowledge or anything like that, Ian. This is just my read on how it's been just generally. Uh-huh. I would anticipate that Ben Simmons is going to come to reports. They do the make nice thing where Simmons talks about how excited he is to be back in Philadelphia and trying to help this team win a championship. and they're talking about how excited they are to have him, and then all of a sudden there's some kind of Ben Simmons phantom injury that results in him not playing games for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Oh, wow, okay, so that's how you think it's going to play out then. I was just curious because, I mean, that doesn't look good for Simmons, so that trade value is going to go down, so just curious how that story came out. Yeah, I'm kind of with you about, I'm not a Simmons fan, I always never liked him, but
right.
I mean, it is entertaining to me, though. It's just crazy because Simmons can make a big story of, like, if he just comes back and shoots the first jumper, I mean, he can really just make everything go away if he just shoots the ball, but it's not going to happen. But
you don't think that it's all too far gone, Ian? You don't think that, like, too much damage has been done?
You know what? But the thing is, I think what Mike Mussinelli said, he is right. Like, I think it is far gone, but he could come back and shoot and redeem himself, but his personality is not going to do it. So, because the shame of it is, like I said, I'm not a Simmons fan. I don't never like them playing, but I'd be curious to see if he could redeem himself. And because in reality, though, Simmons, I mean, he's an all-star, but where he loses is the semifinals. I mean, they get to the semifinals all the time in the East. It's just, he just got to adjust his game in the playoffs, but he's just never going to do it. So it's just 26 teams he's really good against, the good teams. All he has to do is adjust to shoot the jumper and make his foul shots, and he can redeem himself. But he's just not going to do it. I'm just curious of how you think it's going to play out. So you think that's going to happen. I think you're right. I think he wants to get sent home, but does Morey send him home, though? That's the thing. And will he get paid sent home?
Well, so, you know? And Ian, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it. So I think, by the way, the teams are smart enough to know that you know, whatever pops up, whatever reason that Simmons is not playing for the Sixers, he showed up so that he could be traded. There's probably not an actual injury. There's probably no soreness. He missed. They're already showing you, right? Preseason game. Dan, off the top of your head, gut reaction for the players. What's the point of playing in a preseason game? What's the object of the game? What do you if there's anything good that you get out of a preseason game, what is it?
You get the experience, you get the reps, you get the muscle memory.
Yes.
You get the instant reaction.
Yes. You get back into shape. You get back into basketball shape. Simmons is held out of a preseason game for reconditioning. Whatever the hell that means.
I can't say it on the air.
They're already showing you. They're already showing you how the Simmons saga is going to go. There's always going to be some reason that doesn't make any sense if you use any part of that gray matter that's up in your dome skull, that it won't make any difference. He's not going to play. It's not going to be a thing. Could he have a game here and there? Of course he can. Of course he'd have a game here and there. I don't think it's likely. I think it is likely that all sides still trying to work a trade, they just know that it can't work if Simmons is at home. And Simmons knows that he can't get paid unless he's there.
Show me the money.
That's right. 610-632-0975. Eddie in South Philly's next on the Fanatic. Good morning, Eddie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Great. What's going on?
So, in 2021, now, whether you agree or disagree, and I don't agree with it, but that is a penalty. It's just the bottom line.
It is.
You can't stand over top of a guy and flex, and when he gets up, you bump him. And Fournette sold it, good for him. But you just can't do that. So, I knew it was a penalty as soon as I saw it. Mm-hmm. So, if I know as a fan, how does the player not know that?
It's a good
it's
point.
It's just a stupid penalty on an undisciplined team. This team has been penalized 53 times in 5 games. Don't get the last game. The next coach's team has 36 penalties. They're an undisciplined team. So you can say that it's a penalty in 2021 NFL.
You're right.
And they have to know that. You can't do it.
Well, and the other thing too, Eddie, to your point, is that all of those penalties, they're not all taunting penalties. This team's a total mess when it comes to discipline. You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely. They're a mess with everything. They're a mess with lining up on offense. How many times have they a league or procedure penalties? Or it's they're a mess, a whole mess. Everything is a mess. So for that penalty, you know, it's just a stupid, stupid penalty. It just shouldn't happen.
So if you were trying to fix everything, Eddie, if you like had the ability to start making changes with the Eagles, where do you start? Like, what's the first thing that you're doing?
The where do I start? I rip it all up from GM down. You just have to start at the top, because it's just, for the last 3 years, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. So you have to start at the top.
Well, and you know what? The crazy thing, Eddie, I think you're probably right that there might be, it just might be time for a new voice and a new change in leadership. But they might be tearing down for all we know, right? When you trade Carson Wentz for draft picks, that's, you're starting to tear down. Trade Zach Ertz for a third day draft pick, kind of a tear down. What's left? I was trying to think of who the pieces are that are left. And you got to be careful with this too, by the way. The most recent teardown that I remember in the NFL that actually worked very well, because it was a super quick turnaround based on what they got, was Miami. Miami was doing a full teardown. They just decided they were going to rip the whole thing apart. The Dolphins were going to get rid of a ton of pieces. The problem is they lost one too many. They lost one too many people. They're selling everybody, and Minka Fitzpatrick comes to them and says, if everybody's out, I'm out. Like, no, you're like the young piece. We want you. No, if you're not going to try to win, I'm out. She lost one more. The problem with the teardown is that you have to pay attention to the youth. The youth is Devontae Smith. That's the one that you've got to watch. And there's nothing that suggests that Devontae Smith has been like this at all, at any point in Alabama, at any point in the NFL. But that's the danger of doing a telegraphed teardown, is that the people that are there usually aren't signing up for the teardown. The people who are left aren't super excited. Will they be professional and show up? A lot of times, yeah, they will. But nobody wants to go through losing seasons.
Now, let me ask you this. If, and we'll leave the big air quotes on, if this is a complete teardown, should the first step be Howie?
You would think so, right?
You know, I want to say the first step has to be Howie. Because to protect the point, as you just said, if we strip down everything else but Howie, what's the difference?
Right, Howie's rebuilding it. He's put this team together today, and as it is.
And how much of this, and others have said the same thing, how much of this do you put on to Howie?
All of it.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole thing. If you don't like the coach, who made the call? If you don't like the quarterback, who made the call? If you don't like what they've done at offensive line, who's made the call? There's one person whose fingerprints are all over everything. You make a guy the king. If you don't like the king, then you're in trouble. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in. It was a fun show this morning. Really appreciate that. All of the interaction this morning. Thank you very, very much to Dan Fritz as well for waking up early and hanging out with me. D-Line will be on at 6 p.m. this evening. And then we'll be back on the airwaves together, reunited at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Looking forward to huddling with you at that point. It's Joe Torti saying so long, and enjoy the rest of your day right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.